Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 928. This episode is brought to you by Baskets. All right. Baskets is a show that I adore. My wife and I have watched every episode. It is a show, Katie Levine, that on paper, you're like, how's this going to work? But Zach pulls it off.
It's amazing.
And Louis Anderson is amazing. And Martha is amazing. Yeah. Everyone in it is incredible. And I'm so glad the show is coming back Tuesday, January 23rd at 10 p.m. on FX.
And on the FX app.
And on the FX app as well. And it is a genius show.
It is. When I first started seeing the commercials when it first came out, I was like, this looks interesting. But I mean, like you said, Zach is just so good in it.
I would imagine most people who listen to the podcast probably know what Baskets
is.
But if you don't and you saw the billboards, you go, what the hell is that? I am telling you, it is such a beautiful family drama. It's not a drama. I mean, it's a comedy, but there's real moments in it, and it's just such a gorgeous show. I absolutely love Baskets, and I adore Zach and Louie and Martha. So please, please, please watch it January 23rd at 10 p.m. on FX and the FX app. I would like to promote that I will be doing stand-up almost all of February. I'm going to be at Stand Up Live in Phoenix, February, I think, 8 through 10, and the following weekend in Brea, California, and then the following weekend in Oxnard, California.
So every weekend, really.
just go to the internets and find tickets, but come out to that, please. Please come out to that. That'd be fun. Mike Furman will be there. April Richardson's going to come along. And now Katie Levine will bring you the Nerdist Community Corkboard.
The LA-based animal rescue Wags and Walks is opening up their very own adoption center in West LA. They're having a grand opening this Saturday, January 27th at 12 p.m. that will feature plenty of adoptable animals, ribbon cutting with the LA Kings, pet and people-friendly vendors, food trucks, and more. For more info, check out wagsandwalks.org. And Sam Courtney writes, I am from Blackpool, England, and me and my friends have a YouTube channel called Public People Studios. We have around 40,000 subscribers and nearly 7 million views overall, and our content is a mixture of comical music videos and public pranks. We have filmed and edited pretty much everything ourselves on zero budget, and it is something we are all passionate about. I'm a huge fan of the podcast, and it has helped motivate and inspire me to follow my dreams. So if anyone listening wants to check out their channel, it's youtube.com/user/publicpeoplestudios.
Fantastic. This episode is Cress Williams, who is Black Lightning, which if you're not watching Black Lightning, you are making a mistake. The show is really good and is on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. on the CW.
Also on the CW app. I watch a lot of shows on apps, and it's so great that all these networks, they have them and you can watch them on
there.
Do
you know what I wish you would do is just from time to time, just maybe part of what you could do on the podcast is just remind people about apps. But even when they're not things, if I'm like, oh, and you know, go to Old Spaghetti Factory. And
also
go,
on the Spaghetti app?
Yes, thank you. That's exactly what I wanted. Well done. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I greatly appreciate that you immediately ran with that. So Cress Williams is just a terrific guy. He was so great.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those people that become a bigger fan of something when I find out that the people involved are really
they're so
cool.
Nice and funny and cool.
And when I tweeted that I had hung out with Cress and that had done the podcast and that people should watch Black Lightning, like a handful of other actors from the show also tweeted back at me, and I was like, oh my God, now I love them.
So, everyone on the show seems
I
cool.
know, it's great. I know I get sappy, and I know it's, but I just love nice people. I like nice, talented people who make good things. So that is Black Lightning, Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. on the CW.
also on the CW app.
Thank you very much. This episode also brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So it's a brand new year. It's 2018, as hard as that is to believe, and we're almost already in February. So if you're setting new goals for your business, it's very difficult to reach them if you don't have the right people on your team. I met Katie Levine years ago. I was lucky because we were introduced by a mutual friend, and that's how Katie came to work in this world. But what if that hadn't happened? You know, ZipRecruiter is the best way to find the right people for your job. All right, ZipRecruiter will post your jobs to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just a click, and then they actively look for the most qualified candidates, and then they invite them to apply. So it is no wonder that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just a day. Usually, it's just a day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. So if you need to fill a job, don't just stumble around until you fall on someone. Listeners from the Nerdist Podcast can post on ZipRecruiter for free. That's free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Nerdist. ZipRecruiter.com/Nerdist. Here's the Nerdist Podcast number 928 with Cress Williams. Katie, roll the thing.
Also on the Roll a Thing app.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Again, you know, it's part of the reason why the...
I grew up in Orange County.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. It's kind of funny why the Californian sketch is so... the SNL sketch.
Yeah.
We just spend so much time in our fucking cars.
Yeah.
So you can't help but talk about how you got to places because there are a million ways to get to places because it's all just traffic.
But I'll say this. New Yorkers talk about which
the L train.
It's like, I took the 2 up to L, right. And then, like, it's like, they do the same thing. It's just cool because it's a subway.
It's dumb because you talk about your cars. Yeah, you guys don't have cars.
Yeah.
So that's why you don't talk about your cars.
Yeah. You know what else? I'm not, like, surrounded by people, and I get to listen to my own music.
And I can see the sky.
Yes.
And also, it's not an ice forest.
Yeah. And you're not living with rats.
Yeah.
Like, rats are under
everyone.
The city.
Did you... So you grew up in Orange County. What part of Orange County did you grow up in?
Like, pretty much Anaheim.
Anaheim, nice.
Yeah. My wife grew up in San Juan Capistrano.
Nice.
I went to Fullerton Junior College and then transferred over to UCLA.
Nice. When were you at UCLA?
92 to 94.
We were there the same time.
Are you serious?
Yeah, exactly the same time.
No way.
Yeah, I was there 89 to 93.
Where were you?
I mean, I bopped...
No, I mean, like, what...
Which dorm did you rock in?
I got student housing because when I went to school there, there was not enough housing for everyone, so there was a lottery. And if you didn't get it, you just had to figure out what to do. And so I lived, you know, I bopped around Westwood and West LA every couple of quarters.
And what was your major?
Philosophy.
Okay. So what part of the...
That was mid-campus. That's Dodd Hall right next to the the main administration building.
Yeah.
Where
I was a theater major.
Okay. So you were North Campus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I lived off campus too. I lived like in Palms.
Uh-huh.
In the Palms area.
Yep.
I contemplated, it was funny because I transferred in. So I remember going to like the 2-day tour thing.
Yeah.
Where you stay in a dorm.
Like, yeah.
And that sealed it right there because like... I couldn't fit in the bed, first of all. Like, you know, because you had to stay, you went toured, stayed overnight, and the bed had a headboard and a footboard. And the footboard, like, I had to, like, kind of do this
squish
thing.
In. Can't hang your feet off the end.
How tall are you, Jonah? What, you 6'5"?
6'5".
6'5".
6'5".
Yeah.
But he stands up straight.
Not always. My directors are like, stand up straight.
Black Lightning does not slouch.
Yeah, you're like a superhero,
totally.
Dude.
Yeah. Our creator Michelle, like, every take, he's like...
It's not called Slouch Lightning.
Nope. But I was in there. I couldn't fit in the bed. And then the guys who were
there—that's water. Jonah did not just pop champagne in the morning.
The guys who were rooming with me, one guy snored all night long. And so just one night in the dorm, I'm like, I can't do this.
Isn't it amazing that you are essentially now, because you're a teenager, or you know, 18, 19, 20, and maybe it's the first time you're away from home.
Oh, thank you.
You're very forgiving for like a week. Because you're like, oh, this is exciting, Emmett. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, it sucks to live with someone and have to deal with their weird, like, clearing out their sinuses at 2 a.m. or not cleaning their dishes. I think it's good for people because it teaches you how to just fucking tolerate the world.
How to get along, yeah.
But
yeah.
It is very challenging.
Oh, it's rough. It was rough. I mean, and I at that time, I transferred in. So, you know, I was kind of, and I spent 4 years at a junior college. So I was kind of older than everybody else. I was not ready to do that. So I got an apartment with I had a couple of roommates, and even that was like a lot. Because one of my roommates he was the only one that had a computer. This is the only one with a computer. You know, this is like before smartphones and all that. So we'd have to go to his room to write papers, like in his bedroom to write papers. And my other roommate had the loft upstairs, and he was just a pig. Like he just, he would just leave. We got roaches because of him. Like we had no roaches when we moved in, and he was just like a slob. So we got roaches because of him. And
were they all part of the theater program as well? Is that how you met them?
Yeah.
The roaches. Yeah, the roaches they were in Joe's apartment. They were like the most successful guys.
They were graphic artists.
So you were always a theater guy.
Yeah.
But you're built like a titan, so you're kind of like Blade, where it's like all of our strengths, none of our weaknesses.
Nice.
You're basically like the Daywalker.
Daywalker.
Were you always in physically perfect condition, or was this something that developed over time?
It developed over time. At one point I was a pudgy kid, and I was kind of just always a lanky, gangly kid. And then it was weird. It was kind of like when I was 39, I had just had a knee surgery, and I was laying for like 6 weeks. And when I got up, I was huge. And I was like, okay, I got to change and do some things. And so right around 39, going into 40, I just made this big change.
What were the changes? What did you do?
I started just eating better and eliminating lots of sugar and trying to like eat every 3 hours and like staying away from carbs, all these different things. And I would always work out, but I was eating bad, so it wasn't really kind of just was a push.
And it gets hard when you get close to 40. It's like your body's like, yeah, you're not Wolverine anymore.
I mean, I'm 6'5". At one point, I started getting up to like 250, and then so I was like, wait a minute. And I started, you know, trying to work out even harder, and then the scale was just going up. And I'm like, maybe I'm just – this is what's going to happen. Maybe this is what happens with age. Like 300's around the corner. Like maybe I should just give up. And then I saw something on television about diet. So I started changing that. And then things started happening and in a positive way. And I was like, well, I'm basically 40. And if I do this, my career might be longer.
Right.
You know? And then I got into it. And then the whole superhero thing became a thing, like it became a genre, and I was like, I want to do that before I die. So then it was extra motivation to stay in shape and get into shape, and then things worked out.
Well, that's good, because I always tell, because I mean, my physical stuff, I started kind of getting into like when I was 32, 33. Mm-hmm. And it was a similar but kind of like, oh, I don't want to hit 50 and then be like, oh, fuck, I better turn this this boat around. Yeah, and then, like, it's like it's impossible.
It's hard to turn it around.
Yeah, it's not impossible.
The radius gets bigger.
But yeah, the radius is a longer turn. Yeah. And so I started, when I say to people, it's like, it's not about how much you weigh, but it's just about making positive, healthy choices for yourself.
Yeah.
That, and then, you know, as a byproduct, you might slim down a little bit, but it's not about like, you know, there's not, if you're making healthy choices, then you tend to be a little bit happier. You tend to see the results, you know, throughout your life, because you're really, you're basically embracing yourself when you do that. You're treating yourself.
Totally.
And I do think that something happens in the world where positive things do start to happen because you are appreciating yourself more.
Oh, totally. I mean, it was almost like a second chapter career-wise once I started doing that. And I didn't want to do a diet. Like, I was trying to make changes that were, like, going to stick, you know?
Yeah.
Diets don't work because you can't sustain them. And so just trying to find a rhythm, and it's a lot of trial and error. Some people eat every 2 hours. I was like, no, I need to eat, like, 3 hours. Two is too quick. And just finding the right balance and certain jobs start coming my way, and then thankfully my family's adopted it. So we have this thing where like 6 days a week we eat this kind of really good, healthy way, But that seventh day, which for us usually is Saturday, we call cheat day.
Of course.
Yeah. And it's great because my daughter, she's 12 and she loves it. But I hope that she'll carry it in her life, that she'll be healthy 6 days a week and then know that, oh, okay, I can have a treat on that seventh day. But we go crazy on that seventh day.
Like, but then don't you kind of feel, don't you need like a day to recover after you eat a lot of shit?
You do. Because, it's great because in that Sunday, like, I wake up and I'm just like, oh, let me just have like a little shake, a little meal.
Yeah. It is hard to like, it's like a nosedive.
Water all day long.
But that's what happens is that your cheat days get not as crazy because you just feel like,
you feel horrible.
Yeah. I can't process tomorrow. I just need to.
No.
So you actually, it almost kind of conditions you to, to not.
But it's cool because it doesn't like, you know, you have a craving. You know, like, oh, I want pizza, I want this. And it's like, well, you don't go crazy because you know that, like, okay, I can have that at some point.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, it's not like I can never have that again or whatever. Like, no, you can have that on that cheat day. But until we found our balance, I mean, I did some horrible things. I remember at one point, I think I had like 10 brats in one day. And I was drinking old fashions all the way through it.
Oh,
right?
Nice. Jesus.
And then I topped it off with ice cream. Like, oh. I was in bed. Like, I was sweating in bed. Because, my body's like, what did you do to me? And it was just rejecting it. Right?
Yeah.
And
just bits of meat just coming out of your pores. Just like a Play-Doh fun fact.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Your skin.
Yeah. And so you kind of go, okay, don't do that again. Because it was, I couldn't sleep. I was just like, why did I do that? I was like rolling over.
But did you notice when you started making these changes, did you notice changes in your attitude or just the way you viewed the world? Were you surprised? Like, oh, I think I feel mentally a bit better.
I felt like my energy was more consistent because also like it changed. I didn't even set out for it to be this way, but it changed even my like sleeping habits because I was that guy who would be up till 3 and 4 in the morning. And then at the same time, I'd like, look, don't call me before noon.
Right.
And when I had to do life things before noon, because life, you know, happens, it would be painful. And then suddenly I started like, I was going to bed at a better hour. I was getting, you know, more sleep. Like it just really changed everything. So yeah. Yeah. Hmm.
And how long ago was the process for Black Lightning? How long has this been percolating?
It's been like about a year. I mean, it was like probably, about a year. I heard they were writing a script, but I had no idea what it was going to be about. I knew it was Black Lightning, but I didn't know the context and everything. And I've wanted to play a superhero forever. I used to watch, Super Friends. That's where I started.
Super Friends?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd get up and I'd be right in front of that television. And it's like, meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Using his aquatic telepathy.
Totally, yes.
That's kind of why, and as much as I like Jason Momoa, it's sort of hard for me. Like, my Aquaman is a Ken doll
types. The orange and the green. Yeah. And yes. Yeah.
So it's
my God.
So the Super Friends, and you thought, and there was Black Lightning was in Super Friends for like part of it, wasn't it?
Well,
second.
I don't know if it was. I don't know if it was Black Lightning. Or
it was Black Vulcan. Black Vulcan.
Yes, for a minute.
But Apache Chief and all. They had second
Chief.
Wave.
Oh my God! Yes. I mean, that was all we had back then. It wasn't like you didn't have a plethora. You got that. You got Christopher Reeve, Superman, and it wasn't a genre. It was just kind of a thing. But when the genre started coming about, it was just like, oh, I want to play one before I die. But there's only a certain amount, right? And then, you know, Luke Cage came and I didn't get that.
Did you audition for Luke Cage?
I did. That was one. It was interesting. I did, and I had a friend of mine who was writing for it, and I had to go through this roller coaster ride because I auditioned, and he called me. He's like, dude, we saw your tape. You're amazing. Everybody was really talking about you in the room. So you think, like, this is going to happen. Then I started reading little articles about these are the people who are up for it, and it wasn't me.
Right.
Mm. And then he calls me back, and he's like, no, don't believe everything you read. So I gave my hopes up again. And then a day later, he's like, yeah, it didn't work out.
You should say. That's why it's very difficult. Like,
never have a friend on a show.
Well, you never want someone to go, you're perfect for this. And you're like, don't say that.
Yeah, they really like you.
You get all those buzzwords. And so, like, that went away, and I'm like, okay. And then they weren't doing, you know, John Stewart at any point, the Green Lantern. So, and then Black Panther, that came in, and I didn't audition for that at all.
so you went DC.
Yeah. So I heard about this, and I was like, cool. And then when I read it, I was just, like, amazed. I mean, it was just, it was better than everything.
I watched the pilot. The show is really fucking cool.
Yeah. Thank you.
It is such a great show.
Yeah.
Because it really, you know, the current slate, and you know, and I watch the current slate of CW, DC comic book shows.
Yeah,
you know, there's it's like Arrow is super broody and Flash is upbeat and kind of funny and snarky and so you know when I saw that they were making Black Lantern, I'm like, I wonder how they're going to approach this. But it's such a great take on it, mm-hmm. and it's such a human take on him too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like watching, and without giving anything away, but sort of watching what he's struggling with and watching why. And I love that it doesn't start with the origin story.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that, that, cool that it move. Starts 9 years after he's given it up.
Yes, yeah. Yes, me too. Because otherwise, I probably would have gotten the role. No, but it's seriously too. I mean, you know, when I saw he has daughters and he's, you know, he's my age and all these different things, it was just a blessing, you know, and it kind of put all the other things that I didn't get off to the side. I'm like, this is even better. It's better suited for me. And I like the evolution of the genre. I mean, we can't keep doing the same things. You can't keep saving the world. You can't keep fighting aliens and can't keep being campy, you know? And I just, I kind of liken it to the TV version of Logan. Logan,
right.
You know, hey, that evolution of it is awesome. So, yeah.
And how many episodes did you guys do this year?
We're going to do 13. We're in the middle of shooting 10 right now. Episode 10 right now. So we're kind of close to the end.
Oh, wow.
So
there's no way. I mean, this show is, there's no way it's not going to keep going. But I feel like it's such a, you know, they've done such a great job with the DC Universe on television.
Yeah.
And this really feels like a really cool, important part of the show. Are they talking about, I mean, they must at some point be talking about crossover.
Everybody's talking about crossover, or at least more like fans are talking about crossover. We haven't really talked about it because, you know, logistically, all the other shows shoot in Vancouver, which is why they can so easily crossover, and we're the only one in Atlanta. And then on top of that, I mean, you know, you've seen the pilot. It's like the style is completely different than anything else. And so I think if we crossed over, you know, if they came to our show, which I think that I'm cool with that because I don't want to make that long flight. So hopefully they come to our show and they'd have to kind of conform to our style. If we came over to to the other shows, we'd have to conform to that style. And you know, I think what we deal with on our show is much more macro. It's much more like, here's this neighborhood and mm-hmm. what are the ills of this neighborhood? And we haven't, and I don't know, I mean, maybe down the line we'll get to that kind of macro, you know, dealing with, we got to save the world. But right now we're just a lot more like, this is this community and trying to deal with that. And,
right.
So I don't know. I say never, but I think a crossover would happen maybe years down the line.
But you're right. That would be a tricky, like, tonally wise. Like,
it would.
Like, those characters come into that world, which is very grounded.
Yeah. It would be hard to do. And logistically, I don't know how we would do it. And we had a director last episode who's worked on the other shows, and she said, look, those crossovers destroy those actors. It's just logistically, it's so hard.
Well, also, it is... Because I have friends on a couple of those shows, and it is like best case, worst case scenario. Where it's like, best case scenario, you're on a hit show. Worst case scenario, you work almost every week of the year.
Yeah.
And it's not like a 9-to-5 job. It's like, you know, one night you might be working from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
And, it's not like you're out building a bridge across a chasm, but it is emotionally intense work when you never get a break.
Oh, Buddha says all pain is equal, so it's like across the board.
Well, I'll make sure and remind them.
Yes, exactly.
Feel a lot better.
It's a whole level of, like, it just never stops. You're virtually playing, like, I was like, I need to get paid more because I'm playing like two people.
Right.
You know, you're playing two characters. As a matter of fact, like, I remember our first schedule. for episode one. I was looking at it and I was like, I have some days off. I didn't expect to have any days off. And then I realized, I was like, oh no, our schedule separated into like Jefferson Pierce, Black Lightning. So I was just looking at Jefferson Pierce. I'm like, so Jefferson's off those days, but Black Lightning's working on those days. And so it was like, it amounted to like, you have no days off. So
who's playing Black Lightning?
Is that, so I'm doing both of those?
Right.
So I got to put on that rubber suit?
Oh, yes.
Some days it's physical, sometimes it's emotional.
It's fun. I mean, because some days, like, I'm living this childhood dream of, like, I'm on wires and I'm, like, flying, right? And I'm like, oh, my God, this is awesome. And then some days I'm just playing dad and I've got, like, scenes with my daughters just talking about sex for the first time or, you know, they're being cyberbullied and things like that. So I get to do everything, and we do a lot of nights. We're outside because, you know, the suit looks good at night.
The suit looks really good at night. Yeah, the lightning reads better at night.
It doesn't work at all.
Also, he's a principal during the day, so what's he got to, you know?
There's no crime during the day. It's only at night.
Statistics show.
It's only when the sun
The activity, the criminal activity, really is very nocturnal. It sleeps during the day so that it can there can be crime.
I see people waiting to commit, or they're looking at their watch going, come on, I can't commit this crime.
Well, it's like almost like going back to the Blade thing. They're like vampires. You're like waiting for the sun and going, now we go.
And jump. I loved Blade. I loved that movie. Yeah. It still holds up.
Yeah.
The first Blade.
Oh, totally does. Yeah.
It was one of the few superhero movies of the 90s that I really think still holds up.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think it was 99, maybe? 98, 99?
Yeah, for Blade 1.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I still, like, if I see it, I'm like, ah. And the kick-ass soundtrack, like, when he'd start kicking ass and the music was just like,
Yeah, that opening scene when they're, like, in the meat locker where there's a rave.
Yes.
And then he just kicks the shit out of everyone, and there's the DJ and the blood rain.
Yeah.
That's such a great...
Yeah.
That movie's so great.
Awesome.
I saw that as a double feature at a drive-in movie theater with Wedding Singer.
That was the thing.
Yeah. It was Wedding Singer and Blade. Yeah.
Now, did you stay afterwards and watch it as it restarted?
Yeah. I mean, I was young, so it was like we just hung out there all night and watched it again.
The drive-in. I remember that. I saw Purple Rain at the drive-in with my mother.
Nice. When Purple Rain came out?
Yes, when it came out. And we both, like, I loved drive-ins where, like, because you would go if you, you know, and then they would just start the movie over again. Mm-hmm. And so if you really liked the movie, you would just sit there and watch
it again. No one's coming to check the cars and say, you got to move on out of here. Yeah.
And we were all fine with listening to a sound system that was basically a CB radio, just like a tiny squawk box.
Yeah. They eventually did it where you could tune to a station.
To your radio still.
Yes.
Purple Rain to me is such a fascinating, the disparity between the soundtrack and the movie. You know, it's like the movie, I don't remember the movie, I haven't seen the movie in years, but I remember the movie being amazing. But the soundtrack is literally one of the greatest.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the greatest soundtrack. We just had to, we just did a promo for this NBC shows. And Spike Lee directed, like, all of the NBC talent singing Let's Go Crazy.
No way.
Wow.
Over and 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 over again. I'm still legitimately sore from jumping around.
From going crazy?
Yeah, from going crazy. But it is... but that soundtrack is... And I hadn't really... Did you know the lyrics? Do you know the lyrics to Let's Go Crazy?
Yes, some of it. If you don't like the world you're living in... Take a look around.
Well, yes, but there's one lyric that I never knew, and I just, for some reason, never questioned it until we did it the other day. Let's see. So there's... are we going to let the elevator break us? Oh, no, let's go. Let's go crazy. Let's get in a... Looking for the purple banana till they put us in the truck. looking for the purple banana till they put us... What is that?
Is
Purple Banana a reference to...
Maybe a drug reference.
Is it a drug reference or is it a wiener reference? Or like what is a purple banana? And there are purple bananas. They do exist.
And wait, there are?
By the way, I feel like someone's aunt going, what is this music?
Yeah. Wait, there's purple banana?
What's a purple banana?
You kids.
But it was also...
You kids are crazy.
But it was also poignant because there's a lot of reference... to the elevator, and I think Prince died in his elevator.
Did he really?
Is that not true?
He was trying to get downstairs, right? Was that?
And there are references in the song where he says, Dr. Everything's Gonna Be All Right, which is basically just the doctor who's prescribing
Jesus
pills. Whoa. To, so there's that's there's like some very creepy, almost prophetic tales in a song that's otherwise super upbeat.
Yes.
And you're flailing around and talks about purple bananas.
And wow.
Now if Prince had choked on a purple banana, I would say like something is fucking
hold crazy. The hold the phone. I remember
all the clues were right there.
I remember like Purple Rain, I thought it was such a cool movie, and then I went to like Minneapolis for the first time and I was like, this is where this takes place? It's like Minneapolis did not seem as cool as the movie made
did
it.
Did you
out
go to Lake
me.
What is it? Lake
Minnetonka?
Is that a real lake?
Yeah, it's a real lake.
Oh wow.
Yeah. I heard like one time Prince came out in front of his house and just jammed for a bit, and so for years people would just go wait out in front of his house like maybe today's the day where he's gonna
he would do these weird impromptu like concerts at like parties. I remember a friend of mine who did catering, and he was like, he texted me at one point and he's like, dude, I'm doing this like party and Prince is like jamming out. I'm like, wait, what? And yeah, he would just he would throw a house party and then just like jam. So if you got to be there,
It really
see him, see him play.
It really does. I mean, it's sad to think that that a guy would have had problems that no one knew about that could keep. I mean, it just shows you how insidious addiction can be. That people can get to a place where they're able to hide it.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone thinks, oh, that person's fine. And it just becomes a part of their, you know, it's like when you talk about changing your diet, your body really can adjust to anything. Sooner or later, it'll catch up.
Yeah.
But the idea that your body could adjust to just sort of like regular drug addiction and be functioning and seem like, oh, well, he does these concerts and he's amazing and he seems fine.
Oh,
and
totally.
And then all of a sudden, I mean, maybe people on the inside knew, but to the public, everyone's like, what? I thought he was a health guy.
Oh, totally, totally. Well, I mean, honestly, like full disclosure, there was like a period of time where for about 20 years I smoked marijuana like every 2 hours.
Oh, every two?
Literally, every 2 hours.
So instead of eating every couple hours,
I was smoking every hour. Yeah. And then I'd eat like a lot.
Does it bother you now that it's legal and you're like, fuck?
Well, not for me, because it was just something I never could stop. It was really hard for me to like actually stop. And so I know from that, and like my body, like it kind of like when your body gets used to something.
Sure.
Like my body went through like a withdrawal, you know, when I said, okay, I got to stop this.
What made you decide?
Just because because it was all these, I went through years of just like, you know, I would smoke and then, and be like, oh, I can stop. And just discovered like, I'm not stopping and I can't seem to stop. And, and so it just took a while to finally just go, okay, I have to stop this. And I have to like, I just had to.
Even when you were doing gigs or an auditioning?
Yeah.
You'd just be
like, because I became, it was functional. Like, it was just like, and it's funny because people who know me now, I was talking to my stunt coordinator, I think probably a couple months ago, when I told him, he was like, no. I'm like, no, yeah, dude. I mean, I was like, I would be like in a trailer and I would just blow it out of the air vent and I'd put the drops in and like nobody knew. Because also like, it was like, it wasn't even doing anything. I was like, it was just kind of my body needed it, you know, but I had built up like such a crazy tolerance.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I think I kind of knew that I had an issue when at one point I stopped for like probably 6 months and I was hanging out with some friends who like smoked on a regular basis. We were playing poker and they passed it around and my body hadn't had it for like 6 months. So I was like, they passed it around and I was just blazed. I was just like, whoa. And I was kind of like, wow, I'm good. Like I won't need that for the rest of the night. And literally 2 hours later, I'm the one going, hey, bring that back out again.
Right. Oh, wow.
While the rest of them were like, they were good. And then of course and I was like, okay, so this is just something in my chemistry that this is the thing I can't handle. Like I can't put it down. And so, yeah, but I remember it was a very uncomfortable feeling to like let it go. Like I was clammy. I couldn't eat for weeks. I couldn't sleep for weeks. Like my body was going through something.
You were incredibly bored.
Yeah, I know. And nothing was vivid anymore. It was
all these shows I thought I liked.
I'm like, that
sucks. It's like Anchorman wasn't funny anymore.
Oh, totally.
It's still funny.
It is.
But did you go through a program, or did you do it alone, or did you have a support group? How did you do it?
I mean, I just did it. I did it alone. I mean, you know, spiritually, I was not alone. But I mean, physically, I didn't do like AA or anything like that. It was kind of, you know, it was kind of weird. Like once I kind of really decided I needed to do it, there was a show, I think it's still on, but there was a show called Intervention.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was A&E.
I think so.
Yeah. And so I just started watching it like literally every single day. And it was, and they never deal with like marijuana. It was always like people like heroin addicts. They've done shopping, gambling addicts, all these different things. But the thing is like I remember seeing a show about a heroin addict and going through the whole process, and I could identify with all of it, like every single thing. Like even the moment when he was like about to go off to rehab, and he's in the car driving to the airport to go to rehab, and he's smoking his mind out, like just trying to get as much heroin in as he could before he went. And I remember like there were plenty of nights when I was like, tomorrow I'm done. And I would smoke all night long, like to the point of getting like just nauseous. And of course, the next day I'd be right back at it again.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of saw like addiction, like kind of the steps and what it does. It's kind of universal. And I was just like, that's just like me. And I just kept watching that to kind of remind me of like, that's where you could end up. And that's, you know, you have to take this seriously. And it was a day by day process. And I had a friend of mine who's actually, he's like recovering alcoholic, and he's done the AA and he's read the book and all that stuff. And when I described my process, he was like, hey, have you ever been to AA? I'm like, no. He's like, have you read the book? Cause they call it the book. It's like,
right.
I'm like, no. And he's like, cause what you're doing and how you describe it is in there. And I'm like, this is just what I came to after 20 plus years of doing this.
Right.
You know, and a lot of trial and error and a lot of like throwing out bags of weed and then digging in the trash the next morning, you know, and it was just my, and everything else. Like, I mean, I know other people who are addicts who like can't do anything. I'm blessed with, I can drink. I can do like nothing else ever stuck with me like that. It was never anything where I was like, I got to have that. I mean, I've done a lot of things and nothing but that. And so I was just like, okay, so I can't have this.
Yeah, it's that, you know? One. Like you said, it's just your physical makeup is that, that's the thing it likes.
Yeah. I've been sober for a long time, but for me it was alcohol. But it is that same thing where part of being able to stay sober is sort of recognizing that you respect the power of what that thing has over you, because just very much almost exactly like what you said, where when you had that first hit back 2 hours later, you're like, let's do this again.
Yeah, you pick up right where you left off.
If you started today, you'd be back on the 2 hour cycle in no time.
Like in no time. And I know that, like, after a lot of years of trial and error, I'm like, okay. And just studying addiction, I'm like, okay, so this is, I would be right back there. And even like I know when my anniversary of sobriety is, you know, I'm up like to 10 years now, but I don't linger on it because like I don't want to. I just kind of I acknowledge it when I get around to it, because I don't ever want to get cocky. I never want to get to this point of like, I got this, because I'm like, no, I don't ever got this. You know what I mean?
So how do you manage? Because there's sort of that's a good news bad news situation where it's, you know, when you're not, because I don't think people realize that. Even small little choices that they don't realize are choices in their lives have profound effects over time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you're dulling your senses, there's probably a lot of anxiety management or just avoidance of responsibility or not wanting to deal with shit.
Yeah.
And so the good news, bad news is, the good news, you get your focus back. You can really focus. But the bad news is you get your focus back.
Yes. And you got a deal now.
So now you have to deal with
it.
When you're obsessing on things or you're focusing on things. And so what is it that, you know, how did you, was it exercise that helped you manage some of that? Or what was it that helped you kind of push through some of those moments?
It was kind of, you know, I didn't set out for it to be this way, but it's kind of right at the time when I finally started to quit, I was also in therapy.
Uh-huh.
And I was in therapy just because it was not really because of that. It was interesting. I was in therapy because of like a real traumatic thing was happening in my life, and everybody was like, you can't handle this alone. And I had enough people telling me that, and then a friend of mine just recommended a therapist. So I started going because I was like in a real crisis moment that had nothing to do with my addiction. Mm-hmm. But in the midst of that, like I got through the crisis and I just kept going to therapy, and it just kept talking about then like getting into my own stuff. And so once I was doing that, that was kind of right around there is when I really kind of turned the corner and just continued in therapy for years. I'm a big proponent of therapy. So I think it was kind of simultaneous, but it was weird. It was never like, I never set out that way, but it just, that's how I think I started to deal with like myself. Once I could get out of the crisis, then I could like, okay, now let's start dealing with your, you know, past and wounds and this and that. And once you got some clarity, you know what I mean? It's like I was living in like literally a cloud for years. It was like, that was kind of one of the greatest things. It's like getting clean and like seeing things so that when I, you know, when I saw something I thought was beautiful, or when I saw something that I thought was funny, or, you know, that I could go, oh, that's real. Like, that is really beautiful. Yes, that is really funny.
You're really experiencing
it. Yeah, as opposed to a haze.
Yeah, it's not dampened or heightened in any way.
Yes.
It's real.
Yeah, and when it had been like 20 years since I had like experienced that, so...
You almost have to learn, because it does arrest your development, yes. Your emotional development.
Yeah.
You almost have to relearn... how to, or learn for the first time, depending on how long, you know, you were addicted to something.
Yeah.
How to deal with things, because it's, you almost have this kind of like baby mind where you're like, oh, wow, that's amazing. Or wow, that really hurts, you know?
Totally.
And you do adapt pretty quickly, but there is a learning curve.
Oh, totally. I mean, I'm really thankful that it like, you know, it's for me, it started like in the latter, like kind of like 20s, mid-20s. Sometimes, you know, people, their addiction starts in their teens. And then you talk about that arrested development. I mean, there's a lot of development in those teen years that needs to happen. So, I was an adult when it happened. It was kind of a catch-up that had to happen, but I would have hated if it had started when I was like a teenager.
Yeah. And so, without asking you to go into detail, but yeah. Having gone through this trauma and having gone through the addiction, what's something that you would say to people who might find themselves in the middle of trauma, or might find themselves in a place where they feel like they're in an insurmountable place with their addiction? What did you learn coming through?
I'm sitting right here, Chris.
This is all an intervention. The whole
we've
podcast
come here for a reason.
Oh yeah. No! Black lightning.
We had.
Kress is going to pin you down because he's your size, and he's going to start shocking you in the earlobe until you. We're going to give you. He's going to give you shock therapy.
Literal
shock
therapy. Next episode of Black Lightning.
On a very special. On a very special episode of Black Lightning.
Yes, just that must-see TV special episode, the yes. Friday yeah. special episode. But what is it? You know, what's something that you would say to people who are going through this, that now that you're on the other side of it?
I mean, I would say, you know, not to do it alone, and I would definitely say, you know, to find like a therapist or a counselor that you can talk to, because and to find the right fit. Like if it feels awkward or weird, then that may not be the right fit. I mean, that was one thing that. It took me a while to realize, like, when I was dating a girl years before I'd ever gotten, you know, like sober, she was like, oh, you should go see a therapist. And she recommended a therapist. And initially it was okay. It was like a therapist who like didn't say anything, like would literally just let you talk and had no opinion. Like she didn't share an opinion, didn't share a thought about, oh, you should try this or you should do this. Yeah. And it was kind of cool. Like, for a few weeks, because it was kind of cool. Like, where else can you go and just sit and talk about yourself for an hour?
Yeah. But in podcast.
You should charge. You should make some money. Lay out a couch. I'm saying that would be great.
Great idea.
Yeah, lots of tissue. But then after a while, it was just like, okay, this is not really going anywhere, and she's not really offering me anything. And so I just kind of, you know, went away from that. And it wasn't until like later when I met another therapist and who became my therapist, like, that I realized there was different schools of thought and on how to do therapy, and you have to find your fit, you know. And so I found mine. So I would just say to not do it alone, to not feel like you can white knuckle it alone, and when you start down that road, you do have to, you know, dig in, because you don't just kind of accidentally become addicted. There are reasons. Sure. It's coping. You're coping, you know, for something. And it's kind of deep rooted, and it may be painful, but it's also really great on the other side.
Right.
And that's another thing, is as it, you know, as it feels uncomfortable and painful, that if you can kind of see the other side of it, it's so much better on the other side, you know. And it's great for life, because having gone through that experience, when I'm going through tough times, I know the other side is greater because I've had that experience.
Right.
So
some of that comes with age and wisdom and experience and time. But yeah. That's an excellent point about finding a therapist that works for you, because I think sometimes people might, it's sort of like you wouldn't just walk into one concert and go, well, I didn't like this music, so I'm never
going to a concert
again.
Yeah, exactly.
No. One therapist does not represent all therapy.
Yeah.
Not everyone, you know, everything's a relationship. So, you know, try people until you connect with someone.
Yeah.
You know, like really, it's okay. There's nothing wrong with you if you have to go through five people.
Totally.
It's just about finding the
right
chemistry.
Yeah, you got
to
find the right fit.
Yeah, that speaks to you.
Yeah, totally.
I'm curious, and you please feel free to slap the shit out of me if this is a next question, but
I agree.
You know, when I was talking, to Jordan Peele about, you know, when Get Out came out.
Yeah.
And he said this really interesting and great idea that, you know, there are certain stories that only black directors can tell.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And so in sort of talking about Get Out and, you know, saying to him, like, you know, what can white people do to not be the obnoxious, you know, people who think they're... And he said, if you meet a black person and the first thing you say to them is something about race, you should think about that.
Yeah.
And I go, that's an excellent point. But... here you are in a show called Black Lightning, based on a comic that came out in the mid-70s at a time when the lines between celebrating black culture and blaxploitation were a little blurred.
Yeah.
So obviously people are going to be asking you a lot about the race of the show, and because its name is Black Lightning.
Right. Of
course. So have you been mentally prepared for that, or how are you processing that, or what are you saying, or what would you like to say in to people who only want to talk about that part of the show? Because there's so much more. It's such a beautiful piece about culture and responsibility and standing up for what's right, that, you know, but how do you view that?
I mean, it's kind of like just getting into that issue, talking about, you know, what they want to talk about, and going, and then like, yeah, but
right.
Yeah. But there is more. Yeah. But it's universal, you know, that it is about family and the social issues that everybody's, you know, that is, are on everyone's mind. It's a yeah, but, and I don't know. I'm kind of a laid back guy, and at least everybody tells me I'm a laid back guy, and I think I'm a I wonder, am I a laid back guy by nature, or if that's just a byproduct of all the weed I smoked? But I do actually wonder that at times. I'm like, was I laid back before that, or
am I laid back now? You're too big to be an angry guy.
Oh,
it's
good that you're not an angry guy. No. And so it's just kind of a yeah, but. I mean, because I acknowledge the elephant in the room, and it is called Black Lightning, and you know, it was I think Tony Isabella, who created it, said, you know, he had the character. I think it's even in a comic where he says, yeah, I named myself Black Lightning because I wanted the bad guys to know who they're dealing with.
Sure.
So it's purposeful. So it's like, I'm not going to ignore the purpose, but then just also expand on what it really is.
Right.
You know, and that it is more than that. And, you know, we're doing a new thing. Not just because it's about a black superhero, but also just in the way that we're telling the story. It's new. And anytime something's new, you know, people kind of have to see it. Once they see it, then they're like, oh, yeah. You know, but when you're kind of introducing something new, explaining it is challenging.
Right.
People just, they have to see it.
I think I do hope people see it, because it's just such a fucking cool show. It's just
Thank
a cool
you.
Show.
It's
Thank
like
you.
It's very it's like an adult superhero show.
Yeah.
Like it really is an adult superhero show, and it's like there's a, you know, not to give too much away, but you know, the your daughter in the show is like 16 years old.
Yeah.
She sneaks out to a club, she's smoking weed.
Yeah.
She's about to hook up with a guy. Like there's nothing about it where you're like, oh, it's a lot of times when you're watching a TV show, there's a little bit of a forgiveness curve. You're like, well, it's a TV show. They can't really show. But there's stuff in the show you're like, yeah, I think that's kind of what that's the kind of shit they do.
Well, exactly, and that's the thing, you know. It's universal. You know what I mean? It's like at 16, everybody's 16-year-old is pushing boundaries, and they probably have to deal with some of that. You know, and so I think that's why we happen to be black, but the issues that we're dealing with, some of them are unique to being black. I mean, just being in the community that the show is based on, but a lot of it, you know, we have an episode down the line when, our daughter's dealing with cyberbullying. That's everywhere.
Of course.
You know, and we have an episode, I think it's episode 3, where she, you know, announces she's ready to have sex, and we have to deal with that. That's everywhere. That's universal. And so I think people will really enjoy that.
Yeah, it is. It's the show really is a human story where the lead human happens to be a superhero.
Yes.
Yeah. He's just like
sprinkled on top.
Happens to be a superhero. But it's still really cool, and the effects are really cool, and the power is really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, and again, this isn't giving anything away, but also really fucked up in the sense that he's, if he gets cut, he gets cut. Like, there's no, he's just like those shots of him in the shower, just with blood gushing out into the drain. That's a great element too, because it's another way that sort of physically represents his humanity and what he's giving up and what he's sacrificing and why it is not fun to embrace that power.
Yeah, and as the story picks up, why he's put it down for 9 years, why he walked away, you know. Totally. Yeah. And I think, you know, my daughter is 12 and she's going to watch it. She watched the first episode with me, and was just like, I can't wait for more.
Does she like superhero stuff? What's she
interested? Yeah, she does. She went through this like comic. She's in the comics, but they're kind of like girly comics, but she still loves superhero stuff.
Yeah.
She's getting older, and she's become, you know, she's 12 going on 25.
Do you give her a cell phone? Do you give a 12-year-old a cell phone?
I did. I was going to wait till she was 13.
Yeah.
But she turns 13 in March, and got so it. We got her one like right around Christmas, and finagling and working out that. It's great though, because at least it's like it's currency. So she got it taken away like last week for like a week, and so you have power at least again. You're like, I'm going to take that cell phone away if you don't, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'll straighten up and all that.
For me, it was an Atari game system. Oh. I was like, no Atari. I'm like, oh, whatever you want.
Yep.
You
know? I got it. Under control.
But I mean, it's you know, how are you managing? I think one of the most terrifying things would be to be a parent of a teenager right now.
Oof.
Because of how easy it is for kids to be exposed to horrible things, horrible people, people with bad intentions, being, you know, sort of seduced down the paths of bad behavior, because it's so easy with a cell phone to connect to people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I agonized over it for a long time, and then I found it was like a really cool app. And there's a couple of cool apps out there that allow you to control the activity on the cell phone. Yeah.
I feel like they figure out a way. I feel like kids are too smart. They know. I mean, I remember
how
being
to, like,
a kid.
Jailbreak it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like, they'll figure out how to jailbreak it. Your daughter might become a hacker just to figure out how to break.
You're not making me feel better.
I know. Man. I'm sorry. I'm
She's
distressed.
In Atlanta right now. Yeah, I'm all the way over here. I'm like, wait, what's going on?
I'm stressed for you. I'm stressed for you.
But we really kind of regulated it, and we've already decided that, you know, no social media until she's probably 18, to be perfectly honest.
Nice.
Really, well, no, it was really interesting. I saw this thing, I don't know if it was like a TED Talk or something, some guy talking about millennials and all the stuff, and he said that, like, you know, the addiction that goes on with social media, it's like physiologically it's similar to, you know, the addiction to cigarettes and addiction to alcohol. And he's like, what goes on physiologically is the same. And he said, so here we have, you know, you can't drink till you're 21. You can't have cigarettes until you're a certain age. But we just, like, we don't have that restriction on social media. And it just really opened my eyes. And I got to admit, I'm addicted to my phone. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like, I just find myself, if I'm watching a show on television that I'm only moderately interested in, rather than finding something I'm really, really interested in, I'll kind of half watch and I'll be on my phone. I mean, and so we just kind of decided, we were like, we're going to draw this hard line. Like, yeah, she has a phone and yeah, she can do certain things, but like the social media, we're going to wait. And I know she's not happy about it, but
yeah, I wonder, it's going to be interesting to see how it how her social life will differ from some of her friends. Like finding out about party. It's a. I got off of Facebook, and I even recently just locked myself out of my own Twitter.
Oh, nice. On purpose or by accident?
On purpose.
Okay.
On purpose. Right. Like me and my friend, like it was kind of like a near thing. We're just like, let's give each other our passwords, change our passwords. So if we need to get back in, we will.
Oh, wow.
But it's so I have Instagram, which I like because it's more creative. I like taking pictures. So it's kind of that community. But it's a weird, it's isolating. Like it's I'll be on Instagram and I'll see a party, like a lot of people I know, and I'll be like, oh, it's what's going on over there? And it's like, there was a Facebook invite.
Oh.
Never found out about it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, news, I'm like, or like goofing off with friends. Like you can do that with Twitter. You can hang out so easily on Twitter. Now that's gone.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing how it's, it feels like I'm just going back to the way things were before social media, but it's actually, I went back and everyone is already back in the social media area.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's, I'm interested to see what happens with like, if more parents start to do that, which I think they should.
I think we might see like a move away from it. You know, I got off social media years ago, like all of it, until this show came out. Just because it didn't feel natural to me.
Yeah.
And not that I thought it was bad. It was just, it didn't come natural to me. It just didn't feel like who I was. And I started peeling it away. Like I peeled away Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And I was just like, physically, I almost felt better. I was like, wow, there I am. This is, you know, and I didn't miss it at all. And then I got back on it for the show people are like, how are you doing? I'm like, well, it still doesn't feel natural to me and I'll do it. But it just, you know, I'm an old guy, older guy. And I just remember when none of that existed, you know? And so, and then being a parent today, it's like, it's a balance between like, I can't just go backwards. I can't just be like, you can't have a phone. I never had a phone when I was a kid.
Right.
And, you know, here's a giant, you know, rotary phone. Carry that around. You know what I mean? I can't do that.
Here's a block of wood and a knife. You want to do something? Whittle.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
Give her an old Atari and go, that's what you get. That's all you get.
Yeah.
You know, I can't. But at the same time, like, I do. So my wife and I, we try to just balance it out and go, okay, what, as far as how we grew up is right. What is, do we have to just get over as far as this is the way it is? But you can't, I think, you know, trying to shut out the present and all the technology or just going full bore, neither one of those are the answer. You got to kind of find that middle ground. And I think, I don't know, I would hope that, I know a lot of our parents of my daughter are really, you know, on board. They're like, wow, you know, and maybe it gives them kind of the ammunition to do it with their kids. So.
Yeah.
So you're in week 10 right now of a 13 episode order. Black Lightning premieres on the 16th. Is that right?
Tomorrow. Yeah, the 16th.
When's this going up, Katie? This is going up soon because the show, this goes
next week.
Okay, this goes up next week. Got it.
Is there in any episode a reference to the old Saturday Night Live sketch with Sinbad where he shows up to Superman's funeral as Black Lightning and no one knows who he is?
I did not know that. No, I didn't see that.
You've just unlocked like a vague, like a memory in an attic somewhere in the back of my brain.
Oh my goodness. There's
There's two like comic book funeral like sketches in like the pantheon of Saturday Night Live. One was like an old one with like the original cast, like Jim Belushi as Hulk and stuff like that. But there's another one when Sinbad hosted once and like it's some funeral and he shows up at a party or something like that, but like no one knows who he is. He's like, I'm Black Lightning. Like, I'm your friend. I'm Black Lightning.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I hope that, I gotta find that. I hope it's on YouTube.
I'm trying to look it up.
It's probably in the SNL app.
That's right.
SNL app has this catalog.
They have their own app.
There's an app and it's a catalog of every sketch. So if you just want to look up like, I don't know, like Joe Piscopo, it'll bring up the Joe Piscopo sketches. Or if you want to just look up one sketch, you can put up, you know, Gumby, and it'll bring up Eddie Murphy's Gumby.
Oh my goodness!
So it's an incredible archive.
That's
of all
in my future.
Sketches.
That's in my future.
It's probably in there somewhere. So what do you get to do for the rest of your? Are you just doing all press? You must be doing all press this week.
Well, not really all week. I mean, I'm flying on a red eye tonight because I'm working tomorrow. I mean, we're still in the midst of shooting.
Yeah,
that's
look
at
me.
Like, ouch. Ooh, that hurts.
Yeah. Just flying east on a red eye, then you're pretty much going to get a few hours.
As far east as New York, a red eye to Atlanta is you. It's still like 3 o'clock in the morning time when you get there.
Oh man, it's painful.
Like 6 a.m.
It's painful. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was in D.C. Over the weekend. We premiered the show in D.C. over the weekend, and then came here, and then out on a red eye tonight. So doing some press. Yeah, and then out and I'll probably do some more later. It just never stops.
I know, yeah. It doesn't. But it's, you know, it's the sort of the beautiful part of the, you always have to remind yourself, like, oh yeah, wait, this is what I was trying to do.
Yeah.
I chose to do this. Yes, like, you have to remember that this is, you know.
I just look at pictures on my billboard and then I feel better.
And then you feel like, yeah, that's that guy.
Yeah.
Don't get addicted to that.
Yeah.
It's like, remember when I used to have billboards?
Your old dad.
I used to have billboards. Yeah. respect me. I'm Black Lady.
Remember me? Well, I hope you come back on. I mean, you're just such a nice guy.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, my God. It makes me so happy. I love it. You know, I love it when I discover a new show. I'm like, fuck, that guy's really nice, too.
Oh,
you know?
Man. Thank you so much.
I'm a double fan of your show. And I have to say, they sent us the first two episodes. So cool. I watched the pilot.
Okay.
So I'm going to watch 102 because something happens at the end of the pilot where you... So go, oh, okay. There's a reveal.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
So did you watch both episodes? Just watch the first episode. Yeah, excellent.
You watched two?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Something cool, really cool happened in two when I read it on the plane, it like made me gasp because it just kind of, it's just a certain action that was like, oh, we're really real. Like, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, no, that's the thing was I liked about the show is just how it's a well-rounded show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you know.
And who doesn't love James Remar?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, my God. He's one of my favorite human beings. Good. He's such a nice guy.
I like that when he showed up. I was like, all right.
He's such a nice guy. He's so cool. I'm like, every time I see him, I just hug him. I'm like, I love you, man. Because he's such a good actor. And he's like, he still loves acting like so much. And then on top of that, he's just such a lovely human being.
That's cool.
We were in DC and they premiered and we did like a Q&A and Orlando Jones hosted the Q&A. And for some reason, like every time he said my name early on, he would say Crease. He's like, Crease, so tell me. And I was kind of, you know, you're sitting there in front of a bunch of people and just kind of like, and I'm looking, I'm like, what should I say something? And then he asked James a question and James is just like, when I work with Kress. And he's always looking out for me. He's just such a good guy.
Erlanda.
Yeah, I know. I was about to do that. Like that popped in my head, but then like the thing ended. We were all.
Do you remember James Remar from 48 Hours?
Yes, that's the first.
Fucking
that's the first
great
thing.
Great in there.
You know when he gets shot. I remember that when he gets shot.
Yeah, Jonathan Banks is in that too from Better Call Saul.
That's right.
Jonathan Banks is the cop that Gans shoots at the beginning of 48 Hours.
Oh yeah.
But he's like,
yeah,
don't give him your gun, you know. Like he's the guy that he shoots at. This is a fucking great.
Yeah, it's a great.
I always love like seeing those like character actors over the years where you can just like and they pop up in something. And you go, but they've been here forever.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that that Black Lightning becomes so successful that you that it dominates your time because that means we'll be getting a lot of episodes.
Yes.
You know, listen, anything we can do to help promote it or anything we can do for you, I am so much a fan of yours. So
thank you
so much for coming on, Kress.
Thank you.
Thank you, Crease.
Crease.
Yes.
You could say the same thing to me. You could call me Crease as well because it sort of works. Crease. Thanks, Crease.
Crease. We are all Crease.
Crease. Enjoy your burrito.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.